My guest is Lior Lev-Serkaz, chef and owner of the spice shop La Boite, and we're going to be talking to him about the Spice Companion, a guide to the world of spices. Whether it's the bright freshness of mint and tahini dressing, or the sweet warmth that cinnamon brings to tomato sauce, spices have a way of transforming a dish. Lior Lev-Serkaz owns the spice shop La Boite, and he's an expert in creating spice blends and in teaching us how we should all be using spices more effectively in our own kitchens. So welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So have you always been interested in spices? What made you open your shop?
I guess I was always curious about spices, and I'd say I was always curious about food. And I think that if you're curious about food, then spices are a big part of it. The big change in my perception was meeting Olivier Rollinger in France, in Cancale, Brittany, and for the first time realizing that the fact that I wasn't born into a family that has a history of spice trading or in a country that grows spices, it doesn't mean that I cannot use them. And the ability of adding seasoning to whatever is around you and the local products, that's what makes the difference. And it's a bit maybe cheesy, but taking it from 2D to 3D cooking, I think that's the best way to.
Now, were you interested in spices before you were a chef, even as a child, or was this something that grew with you as you were learning to become, as you were learning your craft?
So as I wrote this book, I had to think of the first spice blend that I've ever made, and I realized that it was about the age of 15.
Wow.
I didn't even realize. I was working in a kibbutz where I was born and in the fish industry, and made some lunch at the end of a big fishing day and had a few jars of spices around me and just put a couple of them together. That was probably the first ever spice blend that I made. And that was the beginning of La Boite without even knowing that.
Do you remember what it was?
I tried to figure what it was. There was definitely some powdered garlic and some paprika and some chili flakes because those were the things that were probably around me. I don't know about the quality.
Mm.
So maybe it's better that I don't remember that whole recipe.
Now, you have a very novel way of defining something as a spice. I mean, we think of spices as cayenne and black pepper and cinnamon. How do you define a spice?
Me and the dictionary disagree,
yeah.
I guess, on terminology. I don't separate herbs from spices. To me, spices equal seasoning. So anything that I could use in my kitchen to season food in a dry form, because I got to put a limit to something, is a spice. So whether it be what we think of cayenne and pepper and paprika, but also dried cheese, berries, barks, rhizomes, grains, even seafood in terms of like dry fish, like bonito flakes, to me are a seasoning or a spice.
Dried salami?
Sure, I have not seen one yet, but if somebody brings me some, I'm open to it.
Beet powder?
Yeah, absolutely. Beet powder is one of the things that I like as is, not when you mix it in sumac to get more color, which...
And sweetness, right?
And sweetness.
A lot of what you do is create spice blends. Tell me what that process of figuring out which spices to put together is like.
Okay, so creating a spice blend to me is like creating a dish. And I think that the fact that I cooked for over 20 years in restaurant was very helpful to become a spice blender, if that's even a term. And so I look at each and every ingredient and I try to tell a story, whether it's a place that I've been to or I haven't been to, a person that I met, or a dish that I'm trying to recreate in a dry seasoning format. So I break down this concept into the concept and then definitions, and then I pick the actors of that blend, and then try to find the right balance where there's maybe one or two dominant and a couple of other ones that are supporting this idea, always in a notion of creating a balance of saltiness, heat, acidity, bitterness, sweetness, and kind of having that game of all of these together.
In your introduction, you wrote that every spice blend needs to have a story. I love that. Tell me about that.
It does, and I have a good friend who's in the marketing, and I was always struggling of this idea of blending, and she said, why don't you try to do this thing and say the spice blend is good because, and if you can complete that sentence, then it makes sense. I think that it has to convey a certain story of a memory, of an experience, and why I made it. What it will tell the end consumer might be different, the person at home, but I think if I'm able to create an emotion by the first time you open that jar, then I've done something great.
My guest is Lior Lev Sirkars, and we're talking to him about his book, The Spice Companion, A Guide to the World of Spices. We invite you listeners to call in if you have any questions about spices. Please give us a call at 212-433-9692. Now, does it matter when you're using spices, does it matter if you add them at the beginning, at the end, in the middle of cooking? When is the best time?
So the answer is yes to everything. I think that, A, if you are lazy and you don't like to cook, you can use them on raw ingredients or pre-made ingredients, as is. And I firmly believe that not everybody should cook. Some people should just eat. There's this idea that everybody can cook. I don't think that's the case. So if you don't want to cook or you don't like, it's okay if you buy prepared good ingredients and just season them raw.
I would actually even argue that that is cooking to a certain degree.
It's preparing, yeah.
Well, you're adding your own. I mean, if you're taking spice and you're taking, you know, something that you bought and you're changing it, I think that alchemy is cooking in the smallest degree. And okay. I would encourage people to do that as much as possible.
Correct. So I think that before you cook, while you're cooking, you can adjust the flavor. And I also like to add that same seasoning at the end, right before I serve it, because the flavor and scent do change a little bit as you're applying heat to some extent. So I always like to re-enhance the dish at the end with that same seasoning that I use throughout the process.
Do you always do that? Or are there some spices that you really only want to have toasted or cooked and never raw? Or could you do it with anything?
Pretty much anything. I think some spices actually taste and smell better once you apply heat, whether it's dry heat or with a liquid to some extent. Some really shine without needing to cook or do anything to them. So it's about learning which one works better and at what stage to add them.
So that is a pretty steep learning curve, I think, for people.
It is, but I think the thing with spices is that people are intimidated because we're not born into a culture where we use spices on an everyday basis. I really encourage people to do try. First of all, take whatever you have in your cabinet, take it out.
There might be
might be some stuff from your grandmother there that you shouldn't be holding to it. But whatever it is that you're good at cooking or preheating, do it. Don't change the way you cook. You are you. The sooner that you understand that, the better it is. And whatever it is that you excel at reheating in your microwave or cooking on your stovetop, add whatever spice you have around it and see if it works or if it doesn't. That's the best way to explore. And if it doesn't work, then don't do it again. However, if it does work, then it's a whole world of ideas.
Now, is there a way that people can figure out if their spices are still good? I mean, can they smell them? What is there a test that you like to?
Sure. So contrary to fish that does not need to smell, spices do need to smell of something. So if they smell like nothing or taste like nothing, then you should probably say goodbye to them. You should absolutely taste them. I know that it sounds a bit strange. I don't mean that you should open a jar of paprika and take a spoon and put on a movie and eat the whole thing. It's a bad experience. However, you should definitely know what paprika or pepper or cayenne tastes like because you're going to add it to your food. And it's a bit absurd that we're using spices in our food. We have no idea what they taste like. So they need to smell, taste. Whatever it is that you are purchasing, I usually recommend just adding with a pen on whatever place on a label 1 year and try to use them before that, just so we can all set a time frame.
Are there some spices that last longer than others?
They last even longer, but I hate saying that to people because then they will keep them. It's not a great bottle of Bordeaux or whatever that's going to become better. At one point, it's tasteless, so don't hold on to it.
But I mean, just as far, like if they're ground, they last maybe less time?
Absolutely. So once ground, it's they're more exposed to air, so they will evaporate quicker than whole spices, but both do have a couple of years of shelf life before they are tasteless or scentless.
Now, you were saying, though, that spices don't get better with age, except for some things get better with age, like vanilla beans. You were writing about that in the book.
Correct. So there's aging and there's aging, knowing that even the freshest spice that you will buy at a store is probably about 8 months old because it takes time to harvest them, clean them, sort them, bag them, and we don't grow them here in our backyard in New York. They come from places far away. Things like vanilla are harvested, unripe, and then ripened to some extent or cured. So they do need some time. So picking a pepper berry out of the plant and eating right away is maybe not the best thing to do. You need to dry to some extent. So that's why the aging does matter.
Now let's talk about storing spices. So we've got, you're going to get rid of all your old spices. You're going to, it's your New Year's resolution, everybody. Then you're going to stock your kitchen with brand new spices. What are you going to put them in? Does it matter if it's plastic, glass, tin, wood?
First of all, whatever container you use, that's fine by me. I just want you to know where they are and use them. Don't hide them in your pantry. Put them where you're going to use them. I prefer things that are transparent, type glass and plastic, because you see how much you have left and what the color is and what shape they're in. Metal and other materials do conduct heat, so they cook the spice with change of heat in your kitchen. Glass is my favorite material. However, if you have young kids like I do, then plastic is a better option in your kitchen. And again, the transparency. So whether it's plastic or glass or metal, wood will interact with the spice. So there's a risk of the spices eating in a way the material. Mm. And so you don't really want that to happen.
But what about light? I mean, if you're using a glass bottle and it's light.
Again, the rules is keep them away from heat or cold, mm-hmm. and away from humidity. And then you don't want to put them near a window because they're going to get heated from the sun. Evaporating due to sunlight takes so long. There's really no need to be worried about that. So it's not really a big risk of having, you know, dark containers. And again, my hope is that you're not going to hold on to them for that long, that they will evaporate due to sunlight.
Now, do you have any tips for people who want to buy spices at open markets or, you know, in bulk? Is there anything? Yeah, so tell us.
Avoid the pyramids. Go do and see the ones in Egypt. But if you see these beautiful spice markets with pyramids, it was great 300 years ago where they opened a bag on a Monday and by Friday it was gone. These days it's just collecting pollution and dust. Buy smaller quantities, buy what you use, and be a judge by the color. And if it says whole black pepper and it's gray and it's dust, then it's not whole and it's not black. So avoid those. And do spend a little bit more money. I don't think that everything expensive is better. When it comes to spices, if they cost a little bit more, it's maybe because they've been sourced properly and also packed properly.
My guest is Lior Lev-Sercars, chef and owner of the spice shop La Boite, and we're talking about his latest book, The Spice Companion, A Guide to the World of Spices. I'm Melissa Clark, in today for Leonard Lopate. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. And we're back with Lior Lev-Sercars, chef and owner of the spice shop La Boite. His latest book is The Spice Companion, Guide to the World of Spices. So a listener just called in and asked if the original idea for spices was to disinfect food and prevent diseases.
I don't know about the original thought process, but there's this misconception that spices were used to cover up bad odors and scents of rotten or spoiled food. And your guest earlier today, Paul Friedman, when we were talking about it a few years ago, I love his theory about the idea of that spices were so expensive. And they were reserved to an elite community, if you will. It doesn't make sense that they were used for bad food, because if you had money to buy spices, you probably had money to buy good products. However, they were always used to preserve the salt for curing, and pepper and celery seeds that contain sodium in them. So I don't think that they were used to cover up bad food, but they were definitely used to preserve food over a long period of time.
Do we know where that came from, that chestnut? I feel like that just keeps coming up and, you know, people dispel it all the time. But
I don't know who started this idea of spices covering up bad things. I don't think that's the case. I think that at some point it's like adding hot sauce to a failed dish. So you don't taste anything anymore.
right. So maybe it was done once or twice.
Maybe once or twice, and then somebody just kept it. But I think definitely over time, it's a preserving agent, still is, even nowadays.
Yeah. Well, I mean, salt, yes, I mean, that was incredibly important in its history. But what's so great about the way we're using salt now is there's so many options. Can you talk a little bit about how salt plays different roles and can be used differently when you're cooking with it or your seasoning?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of salt, and I think it should be used with moderation, of course. And I when talking about spices, things like cumin seeds, celery seeds contain sodium in them naturally. So if you are looking to reduce a little bit of sodium or for dietary restriction, these are ways to do it by applying these spices into them. And heat sometimes allow you to reduce sodium in a certain dish. There are many kinds of salt. Some of them are more novelties than others. They're more for color than anything else. And I think you should find a one, two, or three salts that you really like to use. I love gray salt, which is unrefined and still has a lot of iodine in it and really this great sea scent into it. And applying them in different stages of cooking. I'm maybe the founder of the organization that doesn't exist that says say no to season with salt and pepper, meaning that a lot of recipes end with those words saying season with salt and pepper to taste. And I would like to replace it with a phrase that says season with sodium and heat. You pick the sodium and you pick the heat. What if you don't like salt, but you prefer fish sauce or capers or anchovies? That's fine by me. And the same with heat. What if it's not pepper and it's a hot sauce or a chili or ginger and whatnot? So it's really about going into your kitchen at home and evaluating who you are. And do you do speed scratch cooking or do you spend 3 days and you know, own it. You should really own this idea. And it's like you mentioned, it's great that we have access to so many different salt nowadays that you should definitely do a horizontal salt tasting and pick the ones that you like and see which one fits best.
I know I have cooking. Three little salt containers out on my out on my counter. I've got kosher salt, fleur de sel, and then the sel gris, the gray salt. And, you know, it's fun to play.
And then the kosher salt, which I still don't understand, being from the homeland in Israel, is it's a great branding idea of the whole.
I'm going to defend it. You know what? Because I for a while I thought I'm not going to use kosher salt anymore. I'm just going to use fine sea salt instead. It doesn't. It's harder.
The texture.
It's the texture. Absolutely. It's all about the texture. It's just so much easier to know how much you're using, and it sprinkles better. Fine sea salt gets stuck in your wet fingers.
Oh yeah, and you use too much of it, and things become salty. And you know, there's a chef that I work in. To his point, cooking is about three things: it's salt, pepper, and technique. And once you master these, then you're good to go.
I've been speaking with Lior Lev-Circaz, chef and owner of the Spice Shop La Boite. His latest book is The Spice Companion, Guide to the World of Spices. And we invite your calls. If you have any questions about spices, give us a call at 212-433-9692. A listener has called in and wants to know the difference between Italian pepper and Asian pepper.
I don't know exactly what, if it's about chili peppers, then there are definitely some Calabrian chilies or Sicilian chilies that exist that have less heat in them to some extent and some orange notes to them, if that is the question.
I think so.
Because it's always tricky with saying pepper. Is it pepper berries or chili peppers? And a lot of the Asian chilies are hotter, smaller in size. They're fairly small and deliver a lot of acidity and heat, versus the fruitiness and milder heat in the Italian varieties. So I think those are kind of, and also the way that they're applied, while in Asia you'd find them more in a paste format with other components, and in an Italian cuisine more as a sprinkling and maybe as one of the two or three main ingredients in a sauce, and maybe last minute versus long cooking with chilies.
One of your favorite spices is cinnamon. You write about this a lot. And there are a lot of different kinds of cinnamon. Can you talk about the different kinds of cinnamon?
Sure. I'm a big fan of cinnamon because it delivers a great complexity of scent and sweetness without sugar. And I think one of my personal battles is with sugar. I love sugar, but I'm trying to find innovative ways to trick our brains to think of sugar. And cinnamon has this ability. I love sweet soft stick cinnamon from Sri Lanka, which is considered true cinnamon. It's very floral and delicate, what the Mexican will call canela. A lot of people don't use it because it's not as pungent as the Chinese cassia, which is what everybody owns at home, which is this very thick bark. Then there's the Vietnamese that is kind of a cross between those two. And I think cinnamon has the ability to transform savory into sweet. And if you use it in sweet dishes, sometimes into a more savory approach, if that makes a little bit of sense.
It does. Yeah. And now we have a call from Amy in Manhattan who wants to ask you a question. Hi, Amy, can you hear us?
Hi, yes. I was wondering, we were talking before about not not skimping on on what you pay for spices. And I was wondering, one way that spices can be less expensive is if you buy them in bulk. But does that make any difference in how fresh they are, or in anything else that we need to be thinking about?
So buying them in bulk is a good idea if you're going to use that much. So I know it's very tempting to buy a pound of cardamom.
Oh. That's not really what I meant, though. I mean, you can buy a small amount from a bulk bin in a store.
Oh, buying them loose. Yeah, absolutely, as long as they're stored properly. I think that if you put them in a bag, you buy them bulk by weight, I guess, at the store. And once you get home, you store them properly, then that's totally fine. The challenges with that is that they're often kept in those original bags, and then not only they spill all over the place, but also they're not sealed properly. And again, like everything else, it's about the source where you bought them from. So if you know that there's good rotation in that spot, and you trust that vendor, then absolutely go for it and buy them like that. Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you, Amy. Also have a call from Marcia in New Jersey.
Hello.
Hi, Marcia.
Yes, hi. I have a question about cold. I heard you say that spices should be kept away from cold, and I have all my spices alphabetically arranged in the refrigerator. Should I be worried about that?
To some extent, yes.
Oh.
I don't know if you also have baking soda in your refrigerator.
No, I don't.
Well, it's one of the ideas that people put baking soda in their fridge is to absorb odors and humidity because it acts like a sponge. Your spices are doing the same thing in your fridge. So basically, whatever you have in the fridge goes into your spice jars or vice versa. Even the most sealed container is not at 100% sealed, so there's humidity going into them. You're also affecting kind of the nature of the spices by keeping them in a cold environment and then taking them out and then putting them back again. So these shifts in temperature doesn't do them any good.
Okay.
I
should keep them in the kitchen atmosphere.
Kitchen atmosphere, as hoping that your kitchen is not at 85 degrees, which I don't think is the case. Any change in temperature does affect temper. So wherever they are, they should stay there in a closed container, away from humidity, and no fridge, definitely not your freezer because of freeze burnt.
Okay.
Yeah. And so,
oh, thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That would mean all my spices would smell like blue cheese, which is currently
pretty
what
much.
My fridge smells like right now. Actually, I have a question. Speaking of that, I noticed that in a lot of kitchens these days, when you go to highly designed kitchens, there's a slot next to the oven that's a spice drawer or a wine drawer. Have you noticed this new thing? Can we just tell architects to stop doing that?
I would highly recommend not having any shelves above the stove, near the stove. The only thing that needs to be near the stove is things like, maybe pans or cutting boards to some extent, because it is a heated environment and you don't want that. It's close to the stove, so it makes sense because you're going to use them. But yeah, as I said earlier, heat is definitely not a good idea, and I don't know why designers do that. let's put an end to it.
I hope so. Okay, let me ask you about organic spices, because I've noticed that you can buy organic spices versus regular. Is there any benefit? Should we seek out organic spices particularly?
So as a child to a farmer who deals with organic issues, I have my reservations about organic and the organic certificates. Organic is great because of, we all want to eat healthier and safe things to eat. Organic doesn't mean good flavor-wise. So you can have a very clean organic spice, but the flavor and the taste aren't that great. There's more and more organic products out there. Currently, nearly the only way to have organic products brought into the U.S. is by steaming them, which means cooking them. So you lose about 20% of flavor and color, which is fine if you have a highly high quality ingredients. Hopefully technology will change in a way that we can treat organic spices so the FDA allows them to come here and we don't lose any flavor and color.
I see. So if a spice is non-organic, then it can be processed in a different way. So if it's organic, it needs to be steamed
or non-treated whatsoever. However, the non-treated, there is a risk that a couple of weeks later into your kitchen, when you look at the jar, there's not only spices there, but a couple of other animals that are crawling around that can survive a lot of treatments. The other treatments, some are safer than others. So there's a big debate in the industry whether, you know, I love organic. I try to buy organic. The challenge is that the producers in the countries where the spices are produced are not, don't have the means to necessarily grow it organically. And then there's the need for treatment and whatnot. So I hope that in the future, not only the treatment will be better, but it's going to the source, to the farmer, and help them find a way to grow safer spices for consumption.
Now, most of us buy spices in the supermarket as opposed to a dedicated spice shop. Is there any tips you have for when we're buying them? And
sure.
What should we look for?
Yeah, I think you should try a couple of brands until you find the one that you really like, and try to buy the same, let's say, a cumin seed from a couple of brands and see which one smells better, tastes better, and you'll be surprised what the difference is. And then stick with that brand. Evaluate the color, the shape. If it says whole and it's not whole, then stay away from it. The packaging. And the level is increasing every year, the quality of spices that we can find in market. And I always tell people that talk to your local store. Talk to the owner of your local store. They'll be happy to bring things for you and bring better quality products. And there's no more excuses. You know, if your store doesn't carry it, pick up the phone, order it. You want to go online, that's fine by me. Go online and order it. But things are available this day and age, and you can really get great products everywhere.
And don't be afraid to ask the questions, like
and,
you said.
And ask the question and talk to the people at the store, and they will get it for you, because that's their goal at the end of the day, is to sell you something.
So Jean in New Jersey just called in and asks if you have any favorite combination of spices, any spice blend that is like a signature of yours that you really love.
We have today about 130 different spice blends at the store. Picking one will do will not do justice to the other one. I think that if I had to pick a spice blend to put on my tombstone, it might be early in my career, but...
thinking ahead, Lior.
Thinking ahead. I didn't buy a plot even, but it would be the Pierre Poivre pepper that's named after Pierre Poivre, 8 different peppers.
Fantastic. I've been speaking with Lior Lev-Sercars, chef and owner of the spice shop La Boite. His latest book is The Spice Companion, A Guide to the World of Spices. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.